Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are okay. It's a very special episode today. It is a collaboration with our good friend Katie from the Sound Effects Podcast. And together we interviewed the comedian Rachel Fairbairn. So it's a really interesting interview, just focused really on Rachel's love for Oasis, how they've really impacted her career and given her the confidence to go on and be a successful stand-up comic. And it's part of a short series of collaborations I'm doing with Katie on basically Oasis and mental health. There's a couple of other bits that we've both got coming up, some together, some separately, that will be coming out over the next few weeks. So it's really, really good stuff. And this was originally supposed to come out a long time ago, around the time of Mental Health Awareness Week. But I had my own issue, as I've mentioned on here before. My mum died in May, and so life's been pretty busy sort of dealing with that and other stuff as well. So yeah, hence it's been a little bit quieter on the Oasis Podcast front, but we are back and we're going to be having lots more good stuff to come very shortly. Alright, so I'm not going to do any news today because things have been relatively quiet. Few pictures posted on Instagram of Liam and Andrew Wyatt in the studio, which has been exciting. Noel's done a couple more interviews, nothing groundbreaking. Other than that, we carry on. So without any further ado, here is me and Katie with Rachel Fairbairn.
Okay, so to start off, I mean, I think we're approximately the same age. So when I was listening to you, I was like, oh, I think we're the same age. We became Oasis fans at a similar time. And when I've been listening to your podcast, and I heard an interview with you with Sophie Hagen, you were talking about how not a day of your life goes by where you don't think of Oasis. Mm-hmm. And I really related to that. So I guess I wanted to start off with, how did that start? You know, when did you first hear Oasis? What was going on for you?
So I'm 38, 39 this year. And I spent a lot of time with my grandparents growing up. My granddad was very traditional, and he was really into like classical music, and he didn't like pop music. And I'd say this like he sounds like an awful man, but he was lovely. But he was just like, oh, what's this bloody rubbish? Turn this off. And I remember I used to borrow his sort of radio, sort of sneak it out, and I'd listen to the radio. And I remember putting it on, and it was the first time I heard Live Forever. So it was like, I think it was like P103 in Manchester or something. And I was like, oh my God, what's this song? Because I was brought up around a lot of music because my mum's a huge music fan. She's into Bowie, sort of rock and roll, that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my God, what's this song? And then it was really annoying because I didn't catch what the song was. And I kept going, does anyone know what that song is? Maybe Lately. I think it's called Maybe Lately, right? And I was just going on and on and on about it. And I couldn't. And then I think it was the chart show that was on one Saturday. I was like, that's the song, that's the song, that's the song. And I was so excited. So I went out and bought it. And then, of course, you realise you've got, I mean, the B-sides. I was like, this is, like, what is this? And then I was like, oh, great, I've got two other things to listen to. So I went out and bought the other singles. And then that was it. I was just totally hooked. And, yeah, I say I can remember hearing it. And then just when I found out what the song was, because it's so mad now that everything's so much easier. If you find, you can Shazam something, can't you? Then it was like, oh, if you've missed it, you've got to wait for another chance for it to come round, and then you can might be able to find out what it is, but you might be able to find out off someone else. But yeah, that was it then. Completely obsessed.
Maybe I don't really want to know how you got in girls, because I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain? I just soaked you to the bone. Well, maybe I just want to fly. Want to live but don't want to die. Maybe I just want to breathe. Maybe I just don't believe. Maybe you're the same as me. We see things I'll never see. You and I are gonna live forever.
And I remember the first time I went to see Oasis, I was 13, so it would have been the same year, I think, November 95, and it was at the MEN Arena, the 9X, as it was then. I still got my T-shirt, and it was my mum and dad had bought it me as a present. So I came home from school one day, and they were like, oh, we've got your tickets to see Oasis. And I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant, this is so amazing. And then I remembered it was, I looked and I was like, oh God, that's months away. Like, what might happen in 4 months? God, it's so long to wait. And yeah, I just remember it was a Sunday night as well, so we were at school the next day. But because we were so young, my mum used to come with us to watch Oasis. So for the first, we went to Main Road as well. So the first few times, my mum was with us because we were too little. But yeah, so that's how I started to get into them.
I was going to say, is that with being growing up in and around Manchester, was it more of a thing of, as well, about, like, you know, the pride as well of seeing people that sounded like you and looked like you?
Yeah, so that's something else, that because at first when I heard them, I didn't first of all know that they were from Manchester, and I think it was just that thing of, like, you know, now I know, because I'd, you know, I've not been out of Manchester that much as a young kid, and you're just around Mancunians all the time, so you're used to how people sound. And then when I saw an interview with them, I was like, oh my God, they're from Manchester. I was like, this just keeps getting better and better. I just remember being so excited. And it sort of inspired me, because I knew that I wanted to do something in my life with sort of performance, but I was really shy. I was a really shy kid. And I don't know, I found it really difficult to speak to anybody, and I was quite quiet and stuff. And then I remember thinking, oh, if they can do it, oh, maybe I can do something like that. Because it's not just that, it was like even similar, you know, backgrounds, growing up in a council house, that kind of stuff. It was just like, oh my God, they're like me. And then just to see him being really cocky and really, like, you know, giving it the burger all the time. I would love to have been like that when I was a kid, but I wasn't. I was too shy. You think, well, aren't they naughty? It's sort of that thing, seeing yourself or the way you sound or the way, you know, you are, or to an extent, your sense of humour and your family's sense of humour. I think that's a big thing that people forget with Oasis. They're actually really funny. Like, Noel's hilarious. He could 100% have been a stand-up comedian. What I wanted to do, something around performance, and I didn't know what that was. I thought, maybe I want to do something to do with music. I've got no musical talent whatsoever. It is so embarrassing. So I can't sit. For some reason, people think that because you do stand-up comedy for a job, they seem to think that you're some sort of all-rounder and you can do everything. I cannot sing to save my life. It's shocking. But I do give it a go when I've had a drink. But I remember thinking, oh, I want to be like that and I want to do music. So I started trying to learn the guitar and I've got no patience, so I didn't do that. And then I thought, well, maybe I could sing. And then I remember, at the back of like the Enemy and the Melody Maker, they'd have like adverts and stuff. And I remember bringing up from a phone box, trying to join bands and thinking, what am I doing? Like, this isn't, I think in my mind, I wanted to be in Oasis. To find any way to make that happen, but quickly realizing my limitations as well.
There's a lot of what you're saying that really relates to, I really resonate with so much of what you're saying about this kind of wanting to be in this thing about wanting to be in the band or wanting to have some kind of involvement with them. It's like, I don't care what it is, I just want to be there. That I remember that feeling really well. I don't know if you even had that, James, but
like, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I suppose as well, you don't just want to be in the band or like be on the stage. You want to be just living that life. And yeah. And whether it's, you know, I'm sort of a little bit older than you. So I was like 14, I think, when you guys like 12, 13. And yeah, it's still tied in with that sort of, whether it's wanting to get away from where you are, you know, being at school and just that's the life, you know? And that was always, you know, I was in a band and that was the dream was, you know, we will get signed by Alan McGee. You know, we'll get the golden ticket. You know, this is the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket. And I suppose because their story was so perfect and they were so normal and they were so down to earth, it was that thing about, like you said, Rachel, like, if they can do it, then we can do it as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what was it like generally? Were the other sort of girls around your age into Oasis as well, being in Manchester as well, or was it much more like Take That and Boyzone?
Well, yeah, so it was very much Take That. And even before I was into Oasis, I wasn't really, I was sort of like into older music. So, you know, like the stuff my mum was listening to or the stuff that my grandma was listening to. And I didn't really, like, I remember I went through a phase of really enjoying E17. But also I think that was because, you know, they were working class lads and were a bit, you know, kind of, and I mean, some of their tunes are still bangers. I still stand by that. And I sort of, and all my friends were into Take That, Boyzone. One of my friends was really into Robson and Jerome, which is still to this day quite weird. she had it written on a bag in Tippex, and I remember even thinking at the time, like, you all right? So they were all into like different things, but as soon as I got into Oasis, I was like, oh my god, this is my thing. Like, and it was mainly the boys that were into Oasis. A lot of the girls sort of liked a bit of the songs, but it wasn't as much. I would say I was probably the only girl in my year at school who was so into them and so into like the Britpop thing. And I remember sort of when I was in year 7, I think it was, there was a girl who was in year 11. So, you know, when you're in that sort of thing at school where the year 11 seem like they're proper grown-ups. And I remember seeing her and she had like, you know, Oasis written on a bag and stuff like that. And she was really like badges and stuff. And I just remember thinking, wow, I want to be like you. You're really cool. I wish we could be friends, but we're in different years. You know, that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, the girls. And it was quite funny because a lot of sort of two of my friends, who I'm still friends with now, they were into Oasis. But I think they were into it because they were friends with me. And then it was just something to, like, talk about or, you know. So, like, one of my friends would bring in newspaper clippings of like, oh, I brought these in for you. Like, oh, brilliant, because I've got this really weird thing that I refer to on the podcast as the archive, which is just me with boxes and boxes of, you know, Enemies, Melody Makers, bits of Manchester Evening News with, you know, what have Oasis been up to this week or Oasis bringing out a new single. I've got boxes. These are all at my parents' house in Manchester. I've got boxes and boxes of these things. But I think it was a way of like, you know, of course, it's a way of bonding with people, isn't it? So people would be like, oh, Rachel likes Oasis. So, oh, we're friends. So I'm going to bring this in for her. Or, oh, here's some posters that I've got from Smash Hits for you. And yeah, it was definitely the boys more. And I have to say, I think it definitely influenced the boys' behaviour, being into Oasis, 100%. Yeah, swaggering around with the haircuts and being naughty, kicking off in the sort of snack bar at dinner time, throwing trays around and stuff like that. That was 100% all influenced by them liking Oasis. It definitely did. But also, it made you find, as you got a bit older, your friendship group. So, I remember a girl called Hannah that I hadn't really spoken to at school. I found out we were into similar music, and then, we started talking about it, and, we talk about Oasis all the time. We talk about Pulp, and, we talk about Blur, and especially when Blur v Oasis, we really got into that. And then it just helps you find your friendship group, because as time's gone on, as I got a bit older and stuff, then you start going out to nightclubs and stuff. Your friends are like, oh, we're going to go to 42s in Manchester, we're going to go to Fifth Ave. Oh, there's an indie night on, we're going to do this. And you've just got your little group that, you're all in. It's just finding your tribe in a way, isn't it?
About like how you heard Lifford, because it sounds like you had an experience of like listening to the music, hearing the songs, being struck by it, and kind of almost being like, it's like almost like an addiction, like I need to hear that again, because I remember that feeling too. And then you talk about their kind of their attitude and their sense of humor. When did the sort of lyrics hit you? Did they hit you, or any other aspect of the song, sort of on an emotional level? When did that start to happen?
So I think that sort of happened. I think, so the first time I heard Live Forever, I was just like, what is this tune? It's brilliant. Like, I want to listen to it more. Like, it was like, you're dying to hear it again. You think, oh God, what if I never hear that again? I never find out what it is. But I think Oasis were definitely part of my sort of emotional maturity, sort of getting more mature in that way. Because I think really the B-sides probably did that for me. So when you'd hear like, do you want to be a spaceman? And you've got them swaggering around being big rock stars, and then you've got like this quite sensitive song that, is such a good tune that then you really listen to it, and you find out that it's about having nothing in common with someone anymore. Or, I remember thinking Married With Children was brilliant, because it had a swear word in it. But also, I remember thinking, God, I never want to end up like that. You're thinking, oh, I don't want to be like, I don't want to get married to, and be like that with somebody, and, be stuck at home with someone that I hate. I think it was definitely, because you listen to songs when you're a kid and you just think the tune's good and you don't really know what you're singing or whatever. But I think because I felt a connection between to the band themselves personally, I think then you want to know more about them. And then when you start really listening to the lyrics, you're like, all right, okay, this is about this. Or, this is about, for example, Rocking Chair. It's so sad. It's like just a really moving song. And I think that gets overlooked a lot with Oasis. I think a lot of people just put them down to being, oh, they're just these out swaggering around drinking and getting off with women and stuff. But really, if you really delve into the back catalogue, there's so many songs that are just quite sad and quite mature for the age that they're written. Because, like, I was writing sort of in his early to late 20s. These are like emotionally mature songs, aren't they? So, yeah, it definitely, it sort of, one of the funniest things things was. It's how songs relate to people, find songs that relate to them. And listen up. So you know the bit in Listen Up where it says, "Day by day, there's a man in a suit who's going to make me pay." I remember a lad at my school. He was like, "Oh God, you know, I've just been listening to Listen Up," and it just, that bit where he says, "There's a man in a suit who's going to make me pay," just reminded me like of Mr. McKenna, the maths teacher, because I've not brought a textbook back, and he said I've got to pay 5p for every day that I don't bring it back. And I was like, I thought it was so funny, but he genuinely was like, "This." He was like, at the time, "This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life. Oh my God, an Oasis are singing about it."
How did they know?
But
no, I completely agree. We've talked about it. It's quite ironic you brought that up, because I know that's a song, Katie, that we've talked about before. That's sort of, you know, and it's amazing, like you said, that Noel at that such a young age was writing from this perspective as like an old person looking back at his youth. And it's like you're saying, listen, he's only like 25 or, you know, whatever. And he's sort of, you know, like, but yeah, I think it was that so much of it was like you've talked about there. It was that, I suppose, him having been away with touring with the Inspiral Carpets and then, you know, and then coming back to Manchester and then sort of being like, there's so many of those songs that are like, you know, I don't want to be tied to this life. I want to get away. I want to go and do something. And I know that was a real big inspiration. But that was that then part of your desire, like then when you're with your career then to sort of to think, right, come on, let's get out and change the world in your own way?
It was a little bit. I just knew that I wanted to... The thing is with me, it took me a long time to find out what it was that I wanted to do. So there was many years of me, you could call them my cigarettes and alcohol years, where I was just pissing about and I was just, you know, and I didn't really have any sense of direction or, you know, I was working, I'd left school, I was working in a shop in Manchester and then, you know, I was going out 3 or 4 nights a week with my mates, which was brilliant at the time, you know, you're only 17, 18. And then... I just didn't have a clue what I wanted to do, apart from, you know, go to festivals, go and see Oasis as much as I could do. But also I kind of knew that I wanted to do something like they were doing. And it was so different because my friends are such different people. It was only ever me that really had that desire to do that. So, you know, they were all quite settled quite early on and they were married, got married quite young and all that kind of stuff, which is great because they're dead happy. But I don't know, I just always felt like, I don't know, like there was something more to, not just like, just like that I wanted to do more and I wanted to see a bit more of life and I wanted to be, because it's like, you know, listen to Oasis, like most of the songs are really positive. They're just like about having a really good time, having a laugh. It's just a positive thing. And I always think about Noel when he said that he wrote Live Forever as a response to sort of grunge. When it was all like, oh, I hate life, life's shit, oh, and all the rest of it. And he was just like, no, actually, life's actually brilliant. And it's a good laugh, you know, you shouldn't really waste it. So I think that's another thing, I mean, that people do think about Oasis. Like, because of the way Liam sang and stuff, everyone was like, oh, it's moaning, this, that, and the other. And it's like, well, it's quite the opposite. I'm going off my original point here. So I just knew there was something else I wanted to do. And I tried, like, because also I needed to get my confidence up a bit. So you know, and seeing Liam and Noel swaggering around and stuff, I just used to think, oh, yeah, just wish I could be like that. You know, I can't. But, you know, I was a young girl who had very low confidence and was worried all the time and anxious and stuff. And I remember sort of thinking, right, well, because my mum always said to me, she was like, oh, you should do stand-up comedy. I used to think, are you insane? Like, I can barely speak to members of my own family because I'm too shy. Why you think I could do that? There's something wrong with you. Anyway, it turns out she was right. So I just remember trying to get my confidence up. And I did a couple of acting classes, which were fine, and I got a bit more confident. And then I just had another few years of not knowing what to do, really. And then I did a course which was run by Labour when they did New Deal, which everyone kicked off about, and it was a stand-up comedy course. And it was at next to the Etihad Stadium in Manchester at the Squash Centre. And I remember starting that course and thinking, being so nervous about it, and then being like, oh, great, oh, I can do this, and I started doing my first gigs and stuff. And one thing that I always had in my head when I still do it now when I get really nervous for gigs, you know, if it's a big gig or I'm, you know, a bit apprehensive about the audience or, you know, whatever, I always think, right, what would Liam Gallagher do? And that is my thing. If I'm not sure about something in life, I mean, it's probably not that he's not made some great choices, don't get me wrong. He's ballsed up a few times, hasn't he? But in my mind, I'm like, okay, what would Liam Gallagher do? I'm like, he'd go in there, he'd smash it, and then he'd just get on with his day. And that sort of really has helped me in a bizarre way. But it's just, you know, it's just like channeling the confidence of Oasis, you know. So, yeah. I think that's an all right answer. I think I might have banged on a bit there. I'm not sure.
I was really struck by what you were just saying there about the positive aspect of Oasis's message in a way. I guess the kind of ethos of enjoying your life and how that's misunderstood. And I guess because my interest in my podcast is kind of on the mental health side of things, I was wondering about like how that impacted you as an idea that life is for living and what that did to you.
Yeah, so I think sort of I know sort of when you become a teenager and stuff and you have that natural misanthropic, oh, everything's shit kind of thing, which I think, you know, is quite a natural thing to get because you think the world's against you and, you know, oh, God, nobody understands me. I think I kind of had that a little bit, but I think I think because I was an Oasis fan, I was happier. And I think that's because basically their message was, let's have it. Let's go and just have a really good time. And I think maybe, I have to say, maybe it wasn't the best message sometimes because, like I say, you know, I had a few years where I was just, you know, wandering around, pissing about, drinking, but having a good time. But I suppose as well, I didn't go to college or university. So in a way, I think sometimes what I think about this is like, so say for example, someone gone to university and they're, you know, going out and all the rest of it. Everyone's like, oh, well, that's what you do when you go to university. That's, you know, that's all right because you're doing that. But I think when you're just a working class girl who is working in a shop and isn't really sure about what she wants to do in the future, and, you know, you're just going to nightclubs every week and, you know, listening to Oasis and all the rest of it, I think people think, oh, well, she's lost her way. Oh, she's, you know, she hasn't got a clue what she's doing, nothing with her life. And it's like, but I think that it sort of brings out the snobbery. And you think, so I think with Oasis, there was a lot of snobbery around them as well, because I don't think a lot of people like seeing these, you know, working class young men coming into the music industry, absolutely smashing it and being brilliant, creating these amazing records and influencing thousands of people's lives. I think people had a bit of an attitude about that. And I think it was mainly because they're working class, but also one thing I have to say, and if I keep going off topic here, pull me back because once I start talking, that's it. So I think the thing that really with Oasis, the main thing I think is you will never have something like that again. You will never have another Oasis. Like, to me, Oasis are the last band that have happened organically, that have had their own sound, their own personalities, their own an authentic background, and have come from nothing and influenced thousands of lives and had so many fans and done so many amazing things. That just will never happen again. And I don't know why that is. I think it's because maybe music's changed, or, you know, everything just feels really middle class and very inauthentic. And like, oh, great, is, you know, it's like, for example, Lewis Capaldi. It's like, we've all got to be grateful that he's got a personality for some reason. Like, and you know what I mean? It's like, oh, great. Oh, here's a man who doesn't look like a supermodel, but isn't he funny? Oh, hasn't he got a personality? And I don't know. It's just that kind of thing of like, it just all feels a bit crap, doesn't it? And it makes you feel like a really sort of miserable old person going, well, we'll never have Oasis again. And I'm very lucky to have experienced that. But I do feel like that because, you know, when you think about the gigs they did, and, you know, not just in Britain, but around the world, and just the stories we had about them, and, you know, like, even like Liam marrying Patsy Kensit, you know, little things like that, and sort of his bad behaviour at times, and Noel sort of pontificating at people and kicking off, and, you know, you're not going to get that anymore. It just feels like that was the end of it. And I think that's really sad, because I think it's better, like, if you're a younger person now getting into something, I just think, well, what are you going to get into? I mean, what's going to inspire you? What's going to make you feel really good? Like, even clothing. I mean, the amount of bucket hats I used to swagger around in, and looking ridiculous, to be fair, but, you know, that kind of thing of like, there's no sort of group to join anymore, is there? It's just, and it makes me feel such an old trout saying this, but that's the vibe, isn't it? That's what it's like. You know, as much as I love Noel's solo stuff as well, even he's gone a bit sensible, and as much as I love him, you know, I think the one thing that I will say is that I do think, so as much as I love them both, but equally a big fan of them both, but I always had a little bit more of a soft spot for Liam. And I knew that this would happen. The tables would turn. He's becoming a national treasure.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that this would happen. And I've been saying it for over a decade now. And I'm just glad that I'm right.
The Godlike Genius Award is always the most important award of the evening. But this year, it's extra special. What we're about to give out is basically the most overdue award in the history of the NME Awards. No one embodies the spirit of NME more than this year's Godlike Genius. No one has appeared on the cover of NME more times than this year's Godlike Genius. It just goes to show how totally iconic Liam Gallagher is. This is a man who understands exactly what it means to be a rock and roll star.
NME Awards, right, I want to dedicate this to me mum, Margaret Gallagher, the one and fucking only. I also want to dedicate it to the army of songwriters that I've got, past and present. I want to dedicate it to my Universal crew, the Parker Monkeys, as you fucking were.
Yeah, like you're saying about, you know, where is the next thing, and who's in, you know, who are kids? It's Liam, right? They're turning to Liam. Like, the amount of people that you know, listen to the podcast, and you know, and a lot of it might be from, you know, because it's kids of people that liked them the first time around. But, you know, you see with the success of Liam that, you know, people are still sort of thinking, no, he's the guy, you know. And so, you know, when you've seen like Liam live, you look around and there are all these young kids there, and it is that. That's sort of what I've kind of been saying. That's my hope for the future, is that, yeah, if someone else can come along that sort of can embody that same spirit that he's got, that he's almost like, you know, we're still clinging to him as being like, this is still the example, but, you know, come on, where's, you know, where's the next generation that's going to come and do it and, you know, and really smash it in that way. And, you know, let's hope they're out there. And I think, like, I'm not completely turned off to it. You know, you're sort of still out there listening to music and thinking, come on, like, I want someone to come and do it. But, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm not listening to anything released past, you know, 1997.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but
it.
You're
it's
still
like
open
you...
to it, but.
Yeah, that's it. You're kind of just waiting for it, though, aren't you? It's like you're, and it's not just you. It's like you want the good tunes, but also you want something else with it, don't you? You want that excitement that Oasis created. You want that. I don't know. It's so hard to describe. Like, you know, got Oasis gigs. Don't get me wrong. I've been seeing so many times, but the gigs were something else. But mainly because they were so bloody violent. That's what I found. Like, there was times that I was in crowds going, what the hell is going on here? And I'm not saying that's good, but at least it was creating some sort of vibe and a bit of excitement and a bit of, you know, it was doing something to people. I mean, I'm not saying going around throwing bottles of wee round is okay, because it's not. But what I mean is, like, at least it was charging people up to be like, come on, like, let's have it. Not always in the best way, as I say, but, you know, if you go to a gig now, it's like, oh, okay, well, that was all right. Mm. there's no sort of passion created anymore.
Mm. I was really intrigued by that because I guess hearing you speak, what's so fascinating for me is, like, you know, you became a comedian and obviously you were so inspired by Oasis and that attitude. But I often see that spirit that Oasis carried kind of did carry on in a way, but in us. So, like, you know, you did do something with it. You went and created a new career and you followed your dream. So although it didn't come out necessarily in music mm-hmm. or in bands, it feels like people of our age group are somehow living our lives with that spirit and doing quite interesting things. So, you know, you've got your career, like, James, you're doing this podcast. Like, I wouldn't be doing what I was doing probably if it wasn't for that. So I feel like it's there somewhere in spirit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I feel that I 100% would not be a stand-up comedian if it wasn't for Oasis. And I don't know how to explain that, but I think you just explained it. Yeah, there is no way that I would be doing what I was doing had it not been for me being an Oasis fan. And when I try to vocalize this to people, they're like, what are you on about? I'm like, well, I know what I'm trying to say, but I just find it really hard to say it and, like, to explain it. But yeah, it is, and I think for someone like me, who's a woman who, you know, was really into this really quite masculine thing, really, just to be able to take something away from it, to, you know, to inspire you, I think is pretty amazing. The more I do think about it, yeah, it's because I would say to my boyfriend, I'm like, if it wasn't for Oasis, I'd not be doing stand-up. And he's, you know, a nice boy from Lincolnshire. He's like, I don't know what you're on about. I'm like, well, I'm trying to explain, but yeah, it's I don't think anything has influenced my life as much as Oasis. I mean, aside from having nice supportive parents, if Oasis hadn't happened, I think I'd probably, I don't know, I think I'd probably be, I used to work in a library, I'd probably still be doing that. That's probably what I'd be doing. But also I think it's good because it gives you that rebellious spirit as well. So even though I used to be quite unconfident as a younger person, I always had that thing in me where I was like, well, I don't agree with what you're saying, so I'm going to say something, or I'm not going to do what you want me to do. Well, I think, you know, it gave me that sort of spirit to rebel against things that I didn't think were right, and, you know, to do my own thing and very much be myself and wear what I want. That was another thing. Because people forget Liam is very stylish. So very sort of influenced by their sense of style as well. And, you know, just to, I think ultimately it's like that thing of, like, being a working class person, but then really dressing up for things. And, you know, it's basically saying, like, I'm here. I'm not going to apologise for who I am. I can't be anything other than what I am. So you've just got to deal with it, really.
And I think that's a real Manchester kind of working class thing. I think that you look at Southern posh boy bands like Coldplay, and they will dress down and they'll try and look dowdy and they'll have the, you know, oh, hi guys, some sort, you know, and that's sort of what they're doing. Whereas, you know, I've always thought that Oasis much more had that kind of hip hop attitude of like, we've come from nothing. Now we've got it.
Yeah.
And we're going to show you we've got it. And, you know,
yes.
I've got loads of money now, you know, and that's cool because celebrate it, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I totally agree. So one of the ways that I treat myself when I've worked hard or achieved something is I think, right, what clobber am I going to get myself? What, if I've seen a pair of shoes, I'm going to get them, or I'm going to buy a new jacket, or I'm going to get something. And also there's just really something, as your confidence grows as a stand-up, or as mine has, I think, you know, you when you're doing your own shows, and you, because you do feel like a bit like a rock star sometimes. Sometimes you can't believe that people come out to see you, like, bloody hell. And then you do a show and you think, right, well, these people have come to see me, so I'm going to wear something good. You know, it's like, I think that is a very working class thing in the case of, like, you know, I think when you see sort of very middle class comedians, they either wear a suit or they'll dress down. But when you see sort of a working class act, it's like, oh, great, these people are here to see me. Where's my sequins? Where's my feathers? You know, you sort of, and it's like, even when, like, Elton John, 100% working class man, and then it's that flamboyance, you know, Freddie Mercury, Liam Gallagher, Elton John. It's just that working class sort of thing that I think the sense of, like, oh, I've made it, is to dress like you've made it.
I mean, we've talked about, you know, gigs and stuff. Obviously, it's been an awful kind of year for you. Just, you know, your career was going fantastically well, and, you know, been featured on BBC Three and all these other things. And then, bang, you know, it's just gone for a whole year.
Yeah, so, thanks for the reminder. That's lovely.
Sorry, mate. But, yeah, I mean, just talk about how, you know, how that's been, really.
Well, I think the thing is, nobody could have predicted this was going to happen, and I do feel like I had got, you know, you get into a level where you're like, oh great, you know, the gigs are getting better, I'm doing my own tour, I was supposed to be touring with my show at the time, and then everything changes, and I think, you know, in years previous, I mean, it's such a shame because there's so many other acts that are going to be impacted by this that they're not going to be able to come back from it, and, you know, they're unfortunately going to have to struggle again for so many years. And this is the other thing, like, it's taken me over a decade to get to where I am. And that is from graft and, you know, doing the bad gigs, doing the middle of nowhere pub that they hate you, getting through all these things. And again, I mean, there's nothing better than doing a terrible gig, getting on the train home, putting your earphones on and blasting out a bit of Oasis to make you feel better, because that was part of my self-care, let me tell you. I think I've kept going, and I've been quite lucky, because even during lockdown I've done things, I've been doing Instagram lives, I've been writing a new show. So for me it's been disappointing, because you want to be out there, you want to be performing. And I mean, it's doing Zoom gigs. Like, I've got a Zoom gig this evening, and I'll be honest with you, I'm just like, oh, can we not do this anymore? Can we just get out there and interact? Because it can be just quite, it's just not the same, is it? You know? So I think, yeah, like, I've been quite lucky in the sense I've kept going. But I am just keen now to just get back out there and, you know, get back gigging properly and get back on the stage. And also just to have proper nerves back as well, because it's, you know, a Zoom gig, you're in the kitchen doing something, you're like, oh, 10 minutes, I'm was click on and hello. And it's just not the same. Like, you don't get the same nerves. Like, I think the first gig back, I'm going to have to be thinking, what would Liam Gallagher do? Because I'm going to be so nervous. But yeah, just, it's just been a crap year. And I hope that from this, some, you know, we get some really good creative stuff. You know, I hope people have had a bit of time to think, all right, okay. So what I thought during this time is, what's the show that I really want to write? What do I really want to talk about? I've got time. I'm not going to mention coronavirus at all in my show. So I've been working on material that is what I really wanted to write about and stuff. So hopefully something good will come of it. Either that or I end up getting cancelled for saying something wrong, but we'll find out.
Let's hope so. Got something to aim for. At least you're rock and roll.
Exactly. I'm free to be whatever I choose, and I'll sing the blues if I want. I'm free to say whatever I like, if it's wrong or right, it's alright.
Have you met any of the band members of OA?
I have. I've met Liam and Noel. I've met Liam twice. I've met him once. I've met Noel once. Hang on, have I? Yeah, yes. So I'll tell you the stories. So years ago, my ex-boyfriend, who was a comedian, he was doing a gig in Chicago and for part of the Chicago Comedy Festival. And BDI were playing at a very small venue. And he managed to get tickets for it. And I was so excited. I was like, oh, God, this is like so good. Even though I have to admit, I was never that into BDI. But I did, you know, I'm going to get to see Liam doing his Union Jack coat that he had on. And afterwards, my boyfriend at the time was like, oh, right, okay, I'm going to make sure you meet Liam. And I was eating a hot dog. I was like, I don't want to meet him now. I've got food all over my face. Leave me alone. And he pushed through, he's a very confident man, pushed through the crowd, got to the front. He's like, Liam. And he's like, oh, yeah, hi, mate, you all right? And he said, my girlfriend's from Manchester. And he went, bring her over. I was like, oh, God, that's exciting. And he was very nice. He said, are you City United? I said, City. He said, good girl. And he did that with my hand. And I said, I love you. And he went, oh, that's nice. And then he asked me where I was from in Manchester, and we had a little chat, and then I was like, okay, and I said, can I give you a kiss on the cheek? He went, yeah, go on then, and I gave him a kiss on the cheek, and he laughed, and then I ran off, and I was totally starstruck. So I met Noel a couple of years ago. So a friend of mine, comedian Lloyd Griffith, who used to present Soccer AM, he messaged me one day, and he said, what are you doing on Saturday? I was like, nothing. Why? He's like, do you want to come and meet Noel Gallagher? I was like, are you joking? He's like, yeah, but you've got to be up dead early. You've got to come to the studios and watch the show. I was like, oh, God, that's fine. So I went to watch them film Soccer AM when Noel was on it. And then afterwards, he said, I was standing right next to Noel. I was like, oh, God, this is... And my friend who was with me was like, come on, say something. I was like, I don't want to, I can't say anything. Anyway, so my friend Lloyd was like, okay. He went, I'm going to make sure you meet him. He said, oh, Noel, can you come meet my friend Rachel? She's a really big fan. She's from Manchester. He was, oh, yeah, okay. And yeah, I was so bloody nervous. I was like, oh, hello. He went, all right. And I said, I'm really nervous. I'm a really big fan of yours. And he went, oh, don't be daft. Right. I was like, oh, God, this is great. And then we had a picture taken together. And he asked me where I was from in Manchester. And we had a little chat. And we had a nice picture. And I said, oh, thank you very much. And I swear to God, I nearly said, and I'm so glad I didn't, I almost said, thanks for the music. And thank Christ I didn't. So that would have been humiliating, but I've love to meet Liam again. I'd love to go to the pub with Liam, to be honest. Noel was very, very nice, which I'm glad about, because I was a bit nervous because I thought he might be, you know, a bit aloof. He was very nice, very down to earth. But also, I do sometimes think it gives you that extra thing being from Manchester when you meet them. Yeah. I think there's just a bit of a nice connection.
Yeah, definitely. There is that, isn't there? I suppose what would be great as well, once we're back into the scheme of things, if like you're on Soccer AM as a guest, and then it's not just you're there to meet, you know, you're there as you know, once you're there in that sort of professional capacity, then it's different then, isn't it? Because then it's like, you know, I suppose it would feel a little bit different.
Yes, definitely, definitely. There was some very, it was funny because in the Soccer AM crowd, there were some very pushy men who sort of dressed a bit football hooligan-y, you know, with the Stone Island on and stuff, who were giving Noel's wife, like, stuff for him to sign. And she was like, okay, she's like, back in a minute. And she was going back into the dressing room. And obviously, he's probably there going, oh, for fuck's sake. And she's giving back. But yeah, they were so pushy. But she was so nice about it, just like, yeah, okay. And just taking these things through. Yeah, it was quite an interesting experience. But I don't know. I think I'd like to meet them both again, but in a different capacity, you know, in the pub or something. Although I'd never approach them; I'd be too nervous.
Because it is amazing, like for you know, for a band that sort of people do see as like blustery and you know, and rude often and things like that. But actually, there are so many people and so many stories of people who have suffered, whether it's trauma or whether it's just a lack of confidence or whatever, and that they have had such an impact on people's lives. And so, yeah, is that you'd say that was the case with you, obviously.
I'd say so. I'd definitely say so. Times in my life where I've been, oh God, I've been about 5 years ago, maybe, I was like the most depressed I've ever been. I was just, you know, you're just not the same person, and you know, you feel like you're never going to get out of it. Genuinely, the only things that perked me up were watching films that I was really familiar with and enjoyed, and you know, could, I mean, I haven't said that, most of them are horror films and they're disgusting, but you know. But listening to Oasis, Oasis have been the one, aside from my family, they've been the one constant thing in my life that I've been able to rely on, and be able to, you know, turn to, be it when it's a good time or when it's a bad time, and it's they've, you know, aside from my family and Oasis are the two things that have just, I think, given me confidence and you know, be able to be optimistic about things again. Because, I mean, you'll find an Oasis song for everything. If you feel sad, you'll find one. If you want to go out and get hammered with your mates, you'll find one. You know, there's a song for everything.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things we, on the Oasis podcast, we always finish with the, like, because I'll splice clips of songs in. So is there a particular song that does mean a lot to you of Oasis, if you have to pick one?
I think... difficult questions. I think I've always been really fond of Do You Want to Be a Spaceman? And I think it's a really good tune. And I think it really, once you understand what it's about, you know, not having anything in common with people that you grew up around, it's actually really touching and quite relatable. And I remember it's one of the songs that I used to play over and over again when I was a teenager. So I'll say that.
Brilliant. All right. Well, look, where can the kids find you online? What's the best option for them?
Instagram is just at Rachel Fairburn, and Twitter. I'm on there as well, which is not as nice, really, is it? I don't really like Twitter. Instagram at Rachel Fairburn, or just on the usual Facebook and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm always at Rachel Fairburn, which is quite good.
And you have your own podcast as well.
Oh, yes, I always forget. So I do a podcast with my friend and fellow comedian, Kiri Pritchard-McLean. It's called All Killer, No Filler, and it's about serial killers. But don't be put off by that or too excited by it. Just be normal about it. It's available on all platforms. But yeah, if that's your thing, if you want to hear two women chatting about various horrible crimes, then fill your boots.
Brilliant. All right. Well, look, thank you so much, Rachel. It's been a real pleasure today. And
thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and it was great to hear you talk about Oasis and stuff, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll see you both later.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
You got how many bills to pay and how many kids, and you forgot about the things that we did. The town where we're living has made you a man, and all of your dreams are washed away in the sand. Well, it's alright, it's alright. Who are you and me to say what's wrong and what's right? Do you still feel like me? Well, sit down here and we shall see. We can talk and find common ground, and we can just forget about feeling down. We can just forget about life.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Rachel was absolutely fantastic. Make sure you are following her at Rachel Fairburn and checking out that Serial Killer podcast if you're into that sort of thing. All killer, no filler. And thank you so much for Katie for organising that, and yeah, for coming on and bringing her brilliant insight that she does whenever we do interviews. Make sure you are listening to Sound Effects. It is at Sound Effects Pod. And yeah, and you can find it as Sound Effects anywhere you can get podcasts. Make sure you go and give her a subscribe and give her a comment and a listen and all that sort of stuff, because it's really, really interesting stuff that Katie does. A completely different slant to it than most of the podcasts, because she does bring that psychologist's sort of ear and thoughts to it. So yeah, fantastic stuff as always. And we will be back with more of this sort of Oasis podcast, Sound Effects, mental health crossover. And I'll be back very shortly with more of my usual rubbish as well. So anyway, all that remains for me to say is thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And a special thanks, as always, go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod. Which is where I post extra episodes and things go up early and random articles, and I often just use it as a sounding board to get ideas from people and stuff. So it's a really great community of people over there, and we've got a Discord as well. So yeah, so some good interesting chat goes on over at that Discord. But if you don't want to put your money where your mouth is, then you can support me in other ways. You can subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You can make sure you're following me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. It's Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. You can always drop me an email. I always love to hear from you. oasispod@gmail.com. And I think that will about do it. All right, as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.